Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inner Spark Radio. I'm your host, Lena Gazurian, and you can learn more about our upcoming shows as well as listen to archive shows at innersparkradio.com on Blog Talk Radio. You can like us on Facebook and listen to shows there, and you can also listen to shows on iTunes. And I'm really delighted to have today's guest. She is Dr. Eva Ruland, and we are going to be talking about the juicy topic of midlife alchemy. And I want to just tell you a little bit about Eva. She is a transformational coach, a workshop leader, and a group facilitator dedicated to promoting personal growth and change. Her work uses many approaches, including inquiry, guided imagery, journeying, chakra clearing, soul collage, and meditation. She received her PhD in East-West psychology and is trained as a co-creative coach from the Coaches Training Institute. As a student of Jungian psychology and a soul collage facilitator, Eva's elixirs are beauty and discovery. She sees private clients in person as well as by phone and Skype, and she works with groups in Berkeley. And you can learn more about Eva at evaruland.com. So welcome, Eva.
Yes, hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hello. So this is going to be really, I think, a very interesting topic. And I know you're going to share, I'm going to ask you to share a little bit about your own journey to where you are now. But before you share that with us, I was wondering if you would just define for us what you think is, or what you consider midlife alchemy. So what is it and the importance of it?
Oh, disconnected. Lena?
Are you there?
Hello?
Yes. Hi.
Yes.
You went mute, but you're back. So were you able to hear me or?
No, I was disconnected, and but I understand you introduced me beautifully, and now you would like to ask me a question.
Yes, so I was going to say, before you talk about your own journey, I was wondering if you would define for us midlife alchemy. What is it in your view, and the importance of midlife alchemy?
All right, midlife alchemy. Let's start with alchemy. Many of your listeners might have an idea that alchemy has to do with transforming lead into gold. Well, there's also inner alchemy, and that is concerned with transforming our existence into gold, into the metaphorical gold, which has to do with resting in yourself, self-acceptance, and inner peace. And that is what midlife alchemy is about. It is about empowering you to be more fully yourself and to live who you are unabashedly and gracefully. So it's about redefining yourself. It's an inner path leading you to a redefinition of yourself so that you embrace more fully who you are and make peace with the fact that you are aging.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot, the sad fact is we cannot undo aging, but we can change the way we think and feel about it.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. And I just wanted to tell you, it was funny, just 2 days ago, I was looking through Common Ground magazine, which is a magazine here in the Bay Area, a free magazine with different articles in it, and somebody had written about midlife. And one thing she said was, basically she said, the end is nearer than it has ever been, and knowing this is precisely what saves us. So I thought that was interesting as well.
That's beautiful. Yeah, and that is, the end is nearer, and that is very upsetting for many of us who enter midlife and the awareness of, oh, now what? Now I'm in this gray zone. I'm not old. I don't feel old yet, but I am not young anymore. And it used to be this sense of it's all downhill from here. And Midlife Alchemy tries to gently transform that notion.
I like that. And, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say I like that because, you know, the term that we often hear is midlife crisis. And, again, what the author of this article said was that she said the word crisis comes from the Greek word, it's either krino or krino, I don't know how I'm pronouncing it. She says, which means to decide. So midlife crisis is a way to see it is midlife decision. Rather than, I mean, it is a crisis for some people, right? And we do have crises that we go through, but it's an interesting, it's a gentler way to look at it, I think, midlife decision.
Yes. And the truth is that there are decisions all the time that our life and what we do with it is very dynamically unfolding. It's never static. And in our earlier years, we tend to feel very strong and go for some goals. And then, in the meantime, by the time we reach middle age, we might have encountered something that seems like a defeat, and we might have encountered losses, and we might have encountered all kinds of other difficulties that break this sense of I'm invincible. And then when you look into the future and you imagine that the future is all about losing more and more and more and more, the result is terror. And Midlife Alchemy really is working with that. In Midlife Alchemy, we actually look at the terror so that we can embrace it.
You dive deep.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll ask you a little bit later, I think, a little bit more about how you work with clients and things. But I think it would be nice now if you'd be willing to share a little bit of your own journey. I think stories can be so powerful, you know, for people.
Yeah. Well, I gladly do so. How about I start out with the other version of events, and then if there's time and you think your listeners would be interested, we can talk about the motivations, the inner motivations that made me do those things, because that's where the juice is.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
So, great. So my first degree was in Verfahrenstechnik. I'm from Germany. You probably hear my accent. Mm-hmm. Verfahrenstechnik is loosely translated as methods of engineering. And I got into that with the guidance of a book. Let's just put it that way. I received my master's degree, and then I continued to work at the university in a new agency that was called Technology Transfer. Shall I go right into what made me do that, or shall we?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, as a Verfahrenstechnik, this is nothing that I ever had heard about, and it is nothing that my heart longed to do. Why did I get into that? Out of fear, I say today, many years later. As a teenager, when I was 14 years old, my father had a stroke, and from that time on, he didn't function anymore. He was a handicapped person. Mm. And that stroke disrupted our sense of safety in my family quite a bit, and it really made me feel very unsafe. So by the time I chose what to study, I did not follow my heart. My heart would have been to go to Paris and study fine arts. Mm. That was my dream somehow. And a year before I had to make that decision, I didn't feel I could do that. I felt the need to choose something that ensures me a safe livelihood,
mm-hmm.
You know, something that pays my bills. And as I said, my father, he was not able to have regular conversations anymore. He had lost part of his memory and part of his speech. And my mother, frankly, was overwhelmed. She had 4 children younger than me. I was the oldest. And she didn't have the capacity and time to help me much and guide me in my decision-making for the future. So when she heard that I decided to study Verfahrenstechnik, it sounded fine to her. I explained to her it has to do with mathematics, and I was a great student. I was really good in science and in math and in art. She thought it was a good decision, and she supported me in that. And so off I went to Berlin, and I found myself in a room with 400 students, of which 3 or 4 were girls. The rest were all guys. And everybody so I hadn't really been prepared for that. I also had not been prepared for talking about screws and nuts and bolts and the kind of very concrete things that motorcycles are made of, because I didn't have a motorcycle. But all the guys there, they had motorcycles. That was their language and their passion. So it was a tough, tough ride. And I quite some difficulties and inner crisis. And then I decided, I gave myself a year to decide. And after that year, I decided, well, you know, I can do it, and I'm not giving up. So it was my pride. And it wasn't only my personal pride. I also felt if I give up, I hurt the cause of all women who want to emancipate themselves in this more male-dominated workspace. So I felt I had to stay with it, and my personal and my gender identification, all of that, I needed to just show the world that I could do it. And so I did.
Yeah.
So my first degree basically is a deviation from my path. And then, beautifully, what happened was, I call it the powers of the universe, they helped me once I was done and offered me a job in which I could do things that were very helpful for my future development. So I got into the technology transfer, and what I learned was to organize seminars. That is still a great skill for me today. When I work, when I create workshops, it's still a good skill to have. So I learned that there. I learned to organize things, to publish information, and I got my feet wet with consulting as an in-between industries and the university. Now, that was all about technology, but to be sort of a mediator or an in-between, that was also a good skill to learn. So in the end, my first 3 years of working were quite useful and were more interesting to me than all the nuts and bolts could ever be.
Mm-hmm.
And after I ended my contract, so I did my duty. I finished my studies. and I took a job, and I had a 3-year contract. And after those 3 years were over, I went totally into my passion. Then I decided, okay, now it's time for me to go back to where my heart beats, and I reconnected with my childhood dream of fashion design. So that's when I became fashion designer, self-declared.
Great. So can I ask you, when you connected with that passion again, was there a defining moment, or was it just over time you began to feel, okay, I think I'm ready to do this? Or do you remember if there was just something that struck you that made you change direction?
There was not such thing as one defining moment. That was more later in the game when I came to California, when I changed place. I didn't change direction so very much, but I changed place. At that time, it was more, do I go and... I knew I wanted to do something that is more creative, and the question was, do I want to go through another course of studies to, let's say, become an architect, which would have been a fine option for me too, combining mm-hmm. the mathematical and science and the big picture thinking with the artistic. That would have been a really fine course of study instead of engineering. But nobody pointed me to it, and I didn't think about it. At that point, I was aware of architecture, and I knew architecture would be a really good calling for me. And yet, I didn't want to go through another course of studies, and I was ready. I just didn't want to. I was really, now it's my time to play. And I felt I can do it. I was full of myself. I was in this, you would say, absolute ego inflation. I was just feeling strong. I had mastered my studies. I had survived that male environment. I could do it, I felt. I can do anything. So I took the savings I had. I invested in getting a very beautiful boutique and bought fabrics in Italy and made my first collection and presented it to the world and had total fun doing that. I did little guerrilla marketing actions and I had fashion shows. I worked on the choreography of fashion shows and I met all these totally exciting new people. So I had a lot of fun doing that, and then it was also very exhausting because I did 5 jobs simultaneously. I did everything myself because I didn't have the funds to hire all these people. I hired a salesperson. That was all I did. But I did all of the marketing and the pattern making and the supervising of the production and all of this I did myself. And eventually, I was just so exhausted. And I decided to give myself 1 week of vacation. And in that 1 week of vacation, I had 3 potentially life-threatening accidents.
Oh, my goodness. So
that is when the universe, when really something happened, and I realized, wow, I cannot continue this way. And I came back from my 1 week to a letter from the landlord of the store that I was renting for my boutique, and this was a rent increase that was about double the price, so it was an impossible amount for me. And at that point, I decided, it seems that something has to give, and that something is me. I'm not willing to risk my life for this idea. I can step back. And it was very difficult. Yeah, you may imagine how difficult that was because it was my childhood dream that I had to give up. And I gave it up, and at the same time, the love of my life, the relationship, also collapsed. He left
me. Wow.
It was a major breakdown, and that's when I started to look into astrology. I taught myself about astrology. Then I signed up for a course, and I went through a training to become an astrological counselor. I really needed to make sense of what was happening to me.
Yeah.
And I needed to put myself together again. And fortunately, my best friend connected me with somebody almost against my will. I was so paralyzed. I was in shock. I couldn't go out and find myself a job. But she did that for me, and she connected me with somebody who hired me on the spot to teach mathematics to adults. So in 3 years, I went from total happiness, euphoria, going into my childhood bliss there, to this devastating breakdown of everything that I was holding on to and that I thought was mine, my passion business, my love relationship, everything collapsed.
Yeah, and how old were you?
That is when I was 33.
Okay.
Was I said?
Sorry?
Yeah.
Oh, you were thinking, 30. Yeah.
I was just doing the math. I was 33 at that point.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and the job I then got teaching was so good for me. It really helped me because I was in front of a classroom with 30 people, and I had to serve them, and that helped me put myself together again. Just the responsibility for others, that was the best thing that could happen to me. And I did that, the teaching, with such success that the company, the school, asked me to teach other classes. And that's how I got into interpersonal communications.
Mm-hmm.
And I found I enjoyed that new subject matter a lot, and wanted to do more in that vein, and even found a couple of freelance consulting jobs about group facilitation. And yet, in Berlin at that time, it was rather impossible for somebody with a master's in engineering to go and do things for which they thought you have to have a degree in psychology. So after another 3 years, I decided to get myself a degree in psychology. And at this point, again, I realized that I am taking responsibility for my life here. And there are many facets that I need to nurture. And one of the newer facets of the me at that time was a spiritual orientation. And in my environment in Berlin, there was not much support for that. So I was longing and looking for an environment that would respect my spirituality. And I found that when I came to San Francisco on a vacation. I loved San Francisco. I loved the natural environment here, and I also enjoyed the people I met, and I was pointed to CIIS at that point. And when I came to CIIS, I realized this felt like a home to me. It felt like a homecoming, and I was immediately accepted in the East-West Psychology Program.
Mm-hmm.
And everything fell into place for me, even though it seems like a major break to leave my home country, to leave behind a job that paid me super well and gave me lots of free time and lots of benefits, to go into the unknown and become a student again. But I did it. And at CIIS, I blossomed in a very new way because all of a sudden I found people who were excited about about the meaning of life, about what does it mean to be human, how does the psyche work, and how do we put this in a spiritual context. So it was fantastic for me. It was exactly what I had been longing for.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. And then, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. You go ahead. I'm just telling stories here. So here I was in San Francisco. It wasn't all that easy because I was a foreign student without work visa. And my money ran out at some point, and I was at a school where I needed to pay quite a bit tuition. So what
yes.
I did, I...
I know.
I know. Had to be creative. It was a challenge. So I went back to Germany, and I worked in Germany every summer and brought the money that I earned there and paid my tuition. And then I made a mixed plan. I got a partial scholarship, and I worked on campus for $8 an hour. I did all these things. I just needed to make it happen.
Wow. Yeah, you did. Right. When you want something bad enough, we will find a way. I mean, your story is, I mean, it's still evolving, obviously, but now it's interesting that you went from engineering to, you know, on the other end of the spectrum now, how you're working with people in psychology and facilitation. And as you tell the story backwards, you can see the threads. But at the time, when you're in the midst of it, you know, it's harder sometimes to take the steps, I think, for fear, like you had the fear of survival and security and giving up your dream and letting go of your dream, etc. And so I mean, in terms of your own story and then the people that you work with, what do you find are the themes that you end up working with people at this time? Does
yeah,
that make sense?
We'll see. I'll try my answer, and then you ask more questions if I don't answer it completely. So the themes are most of the things that I know about unsatisfying work situations or unhappy relationships or sometimes people come to me and they don't even know what their theme really is, but they know that they are not, that something isn't right. They feel not excited about their life. They are mm-hmm. unhappy with themselves and their situation. And they decide, most of them have reached the age of 40 by the time they come to me. Not everybody, there are exceptions, but most of them, and they decide this can't be it. So the fact that I have this history of really going for something else, after the first thing doesn't work out, the second thing breaks down, and then I still continue to do something about it. And I think that is what draws people to me who are looking for support in finding their bliss. That's really the overarching theme, finding their bliss. How do you mm-hmm. find your bliss? Does that
and
make
have,
sense?
It does make sense, right, and have someone help you through the fear and even the uncertainty of, I know what I don't want, but I don't know what I do want, or they need help uncovering what they do want or what we do want sometimes, you know. That's why you have to sometimes dive pretty deep, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm excited about, diving deep. With being somebody who studied Jung and who really felt like this was a revelation to learn about Jung's concept of the unconscious and to understand that we all are, to a very big extent, driven by unconscious desires and unconscious reactions, and to move those from the unconscious as much as possible into the realm of consciousness. That is really what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
And to also the other way around, to use this connection between the conscious mind and the unconscious to help manifest what wants to be manifested, as opposed to running against the wall when the door is 3 yards over or something like that.
Can you say a little bit more? Yeah, can you give me another example?
Right. The best example, after talking about my own past, might be I chose theoretical engineering because I thought that I can bring in my math skills and I can bring in my chemistry skills. And had I known that with architecture, I can bring in my math skills and I can bring in my passion for beauty and for design and my artistic expression, you know, that door was just a little bit over from engineering, but I didn't see it.
I see,
Had somebody helped me to go deeper to ask, so why do you really want to do that? I would have said, well, you know, for one thing, I love math and I love chemistry, and the other, I want something that is dynamic and changing, and that was what I thought engineering would be. And I also need to have some safety. And that was all that I looked at, and I forgot to look at other things that make me me.
Yeah.
And they need to be taken into account.
Yeah, which is why, I mean, as it is with everyone I talk with who works with people, I always say, you know, the ideal is when you're in a place like that is to go and work with someone like yourself with the different modalities and to have the support and the guidance. But for those people who are listening who maybe won't do that yet or can't do it or something at the moment, I think there's a way. Well, I guess I wanted to ask you, you were going to share with us, which I don't know what the questions are yet either, so I've got my pen out and I'm ready. You're going to give us some questions that you think are the most powerful for people to journal with, to work with in this, you know, if they're in this state of inquiry, in this midlife alchemy. So I was wondering if you would share those with us, and also maybe before that, talk about steeping and what the importance is of steeping, or what is steeping, or whichever order you think makes sense.
Okay, so steeping. Steeping is a part of the midlife alchemy. It is an expression that was born in the definition of the course midlife alchemy, and midlife alchemy moves along stages of the alchemical process, and which are defined by colors. We start with the black, the darkness, which is going into all the things we reject in terms of Jungian or the things we reject and the things we don't want to touch, the things we are afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the peacock scale. That is when something begins to move and we see creativity comes in. We allow the unconscious to pop through and give information. So we start with the dark, the stuckness, basically, and move into an opening. And then we move from that peacock tail, the many colors, into the white, which stands for the feminine and the unconscious, mm-hmm. and then into the red, the masculine, the conscious mind, to get to the gold. The gold is when all of these, when the white queen and the red king unite, when the unconscious and the conscious work together in harmony, and that is when the gold emerges. So we work our way along this color scheme. And in an introductory course, I do the introduction, the first week, and then I could talk every week about a new aspect of the process, but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that the process happens, right? That's just a theory. So to the way our psyche works, change takes time. We need to make time for change to sink in and to be processed. And that is where the term steeping comes in.
Mm.
Steeping is like when you have a tea bag and you put it into the water. In order to affect the change from hot water to tea, you have to give it some time. You have to steep the tea. And that's
yeah.
the same thing here with us, with the psyche. We need to hear the concept that is only scratching the surface. Then to do exercises is to go a little deeper and to find some pathways. But then the pathways could be like the openings in the tea bag. And then you have to still wait for the psyche to make these changes to really embrace it and to process that.
Yeah, so that's the way sort of going from the deep inside out rather than starting with the red, starting with the masculine and trying to decide, you know.
Exactly.
Starting from the, yeah.
And the typical way, at least I learned, and most schools still teach, is all from the red. There is no
yeah.
nothing.
Yeah, they skip. There's a lot of skipping that goes on, I think. And would you say the black is the same as shadow work, or would it not be this interchangeable?
It's not quite interchangeable. It includes shadow work, I would say.
Okay.
It includes the shadow work, and it is bigger than that. It would include everything that constellates a problem. Everything we have difficulties with.
Okay.
And I think the specifics about midlife alchemy. Usually it takes time to get anybody to jump into the problems culturally. This is not easy for people who grew up in America to do. In Germany, it's a little different. In Germany, there's more willingness to look at the darkness because we had to so much.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it is more, I have to prepare people. So I have a session, a warm-up session, basically, a session where we do a life review and where we separate what seems to be positive and negative by an axis down and an axis up. And in that session, participants learn to see a connection between the up and down, that usually an down phase is followed by an up phase, and the down phase, in this down phase, usually we learn, we grow, we widen in one way or other, and that lifts us out of the down phase into the next up. So we do a process to prepare, and next I use a lot of prompts, visual prompts, poetry, words, free association in all kinds of ways, just to allow the psyche to be a little more daring and playful, and to
mm-hmm.
be playful. And so the prompts for the different sessions, for the different colors, they have to do with the feeling tone of the color. And for black, it's all difficulty that it could be just, and just a little mark up here, but people have difficulty, many women have difficulty with self-esteem, they have difficulty with feeling that they are worth, that they are lovable, that they are worth being loved, that they might not feel beautiful, especially when they see their first wrinkles and feel that their tissue is sagging. All these things are a part of the black. So it's more than the shadow.
I see. No, that sounds, I mean, just the way that you, the way that it sounds like you slowly take people through this process, it sounds very supportive and really inviting into something that I think is definitely harder to journey in on our own. But having said that, I definitely do, and I want to make sure with the time that we have that I get into to get people also thinking about, as a way of inquiry or the questions too, what those would be that people could work with that you think are powerful. And that was a really beautiful description of the whole steeping process. Thank you. I didn't realize it was so in depth like that. And I'm sure you could go on. I'm sure you could talk much more about it, but I mean, it gives a good sense of this, what steeping really, really means with you.
Yeah. So, thank you for saying that. Two questions that I ask at some point in the course that I think are very helpful. The first question is, what do you like about yourself? Write down all the things you like about yourself. And really take time
. So not necessarily in one sitting, or do you take the time in one sitting to do it?
Well, you take the time in one sitting. You write down what you like about yourself, and then you can take two pieces of paper or two pages, and then you take another page and you write down all the things you don't like about yourself. And then, interesting, with some of the course participants, it's very interesting. They look from one side to the other and they see, wow, there are 5 things I like about myself, and then there are 25 things I don't like about myself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see something like that, the next question is, are you hard on yourself? And then go back and see if you want to add to the list of things you like about yourself, and maybe revise some of the things you don't like about yourself. And I usually like to do that and have it sit for a little bit, but here we won't sit for a little bit, we just continue. So the
right.
follow-up...
It's something people would do on their own, yeah.
Yeah. The follow-up, after you do that, you don't even think about anything else, but I want to give all the listeners a follow-up question then that you could maybe work with a day later or just a little bit later. First, really stay with the authentic, what do I like about myself and what do I not like about myself. And then continue with what is a gift in those things that I don't seem to like about myself. Is there a gift in those things? And there is. Or what's the power behind this, my so-called negative traits? That's another way of wording it. I give you an example here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you for an example. That's perfect, yeah.
Yeah. So I can be rather stubborn, but you heard that I stayed with my 4.5 years of engineer studies just because I was stubborn, basically. And what is the positive, or what's the power behind that so-called negative trait of being stubborn? Well, that would be I am persistent. It's just a different side of the same thing. You've heard of every coin has two sides. So it's one side is I'm stubborn, the other side is I am persistent. And the opposite example would be I give in too easily, and then you can look at, well, why would you give in so easily? Because you wish for harmony or because you are compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be the things that the list of your supposedly negative traits could reveal. It's expanding your understanding of yourself.
Yeah. And is this something that you do with clients more so in the beginning of the process, and then as you continue to work with sort of as they're trying to work towards what they love and or work towards a vision or uncover things? Or where does this come in the process when
this
you work with people?
This comes almost in the middle of the process. It comes between, after we look at the darkness and at the many colors, it is the transition into the red, because this is where the conscious mind comes in.
And okay.
And that's also why I thought it might be an easy, or two easy questions to work with, because you can think about it consciously. You don't need to have other exercises to go deeper into the unconscious first. You can already start with this.
And would there be a book or books or a movie that you would recommend people who might be interested in working more with the black and steeping a little there, if they wanted to sort of get into that a bit more through, I mean, I know it's not an intellectual exercise, so maybe that sounds kind of funny, but I mean, just in order to get a little bit more into that, is there anything you would recommend, or any particular author, or would you say Jung, or...
Well, Jung, I love Jung, but Jung isn't so... Well, actually, there is Memories, Dreams, Reflections. That's his autobiography. That I would consider his most accessible book. It's not necessarily about... He writes about alchemy a little bit there, but it's about his path.
Yes, it's a good book.
And he went through difficulties, and he talks about them.
Yeah, he did.
So you catch me a little bit unprepared here. I can't come up spontaneously with a book. There are many movies that show transformation and that show a path going through difficulty and emerging out on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Can you name one or two of those, or did I catch you off guard again with that?
you caught me off guard here, but I'm just thinking of the last movies I saw. I can see some of that in both the Theory of Everything, the movie about the life of Stephen Hawking, mm-hmm. where with him it is mind over matter is the thread of that story. There is a man who values his brain more than his body, even though he struggles with the loss of his physical capacities. But so that is not exactly what I am about, but it is. I am very much for embodiment and for valuing the body.
Yeah.
But it shows the strength of, it shows how transformation takes place. That movie shows how, against all odds and all predictions, he actually finds a way to create a life for himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
Do you have an idea? Does something come to mind to you? You might
Not to my mind in this moment, no. Oh, this is kind of a funny example, but Shirley Valentine, did you ever see that movie? I don't know why that just came to my mind. Oh, well, she's a married woman living in England, middle-aged, and unsatisfied with her life, and she just up and moves to Greece and, sort of just goes on her own journey there and does something very unexpected and kind of follows her inner voice. And so, yeah, that's just what popped into my head in this moment. It's an older movie.
I'll make a note. I will go and see. I will find that movie and watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good movie, actually. But I was wondering, go ahead. Sorry, we have this delay, so it's hard.
Yeah, I find this is interesting, and I haven't sat down and thought about it, but I have had the sense every once in a while when I see a movie, my husband happens to be a movie buff. He loves movies, and he goes and sees movies. He is even in a circle for movie snobs, and he does all these things. And I like different movies, or movies for different reasons than he does. I love them for their story, and he loves them for the execution. But I have often thought that we had a conversation about Interstellar, a recent movie, and he thinks this is a movie that has all these flaws, and sure, it probably has, and yet it has a captivating story because there is the unfolding of something, of a relationship need or of a human need in that movie that is shown, and the upset that is created by not having a future. And so, in a way, this is almost like a midlife topic. It is on a planetary scale what happens to each of us in midlife, that the planet starts to not nurture us as much as we're used to be nurtured. Like the body isn't as perfect as we were used for it to be. So it is an interesting idea to look at movies and to see what they how they mirror certain psychological phenomena. It's a great idea.
It is. I think, you know, for many of us, we learn through story and other people's stories, and we're inspired and touched, you know, in ways that move us in different directions. So yeah, stories can be very powerful, you know, depending on the story. So,
right.
Well, Eva,
yeah.
we just have about 5 minutes left. So I want to ask you, which, you know, I feel like we could probably talk for 2 or 3 hours on this topic because it is such a rich topic. But since, you know, we don't have that much time. If, you know, in these last couple of minutes, you know, what do you want to impart to people about this midlife alchemy process in terms of what can people think about? How can they approach it? What can they do? Or just what do you want to say? What do you want to make sure that you say?
Well, what is important to me is that people look at themselves in a loving way, that they change their perspective, and that they look at their inner strength and their spirit strength, and that they forgive themselves for things that are not perfect, for possible failures, for that they understand that positive and negative are side by side, or two sides of a coin oftentimes even.
That
their core and receive strength from their core, which is the spiritual way of receiving strength, and that seems to be really the strength we need as we go forward. And there are practical things I teach people to appreciate who they are, to give themselves credit for their achievements, to give themselves credit for who they are, to perhaps step away from pleasing others as a motivation for what they do, because that is oftentimes what creates problems. So, and that is the theme that comes up again and again, because that's what many of us women particularly have learned to do, to when you stop pleasing others as your very first guiding star, then you can start to focus on what really matters to you, and you can become more in touch with who you really are and what really matters to you, what you really want. And once you do that, then joy emerges. Your inner joy can flow like a river from your source. It can well up and well out, and it changes the way you look at life and you feel about yourself. So to do things, to be kind to yourself, to please yourself more than you please others, and to allow your inner joy to well up, that's quite important to me.
And it's not always easy, that last piece, I think, for many reasons, I think, for many of us. It's a practice, I think.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so, yeah. And that is not only in midlife alchemy, in my regular coaching practice, too. That is what I do. The river of joy is inside everybody, but how we can connect to it and reconnect to it and reclaim it and then maintain it and make sure that we stay in touch with it and sustain that. That's the path, yeah.
That's the path. Yeah, maybe that's our. Maybe that'll be another show we'll do someday. Huh? Connecting to the river of joy, right?
That's beautiful.
I like that. Yeah, I think that sounds like it would be a really nice and helpful discussion. Well, before we end, would you like to share with people? I think you have a new group starting in Berkeley in the Bay Area. If you want to just share a little bit about that.
Oh, thanks for asking. Yes, I have a new Midlife Alchemy group starting in Berkeley on Monday, January 12th, and we start at 7:15. It's a group that will continue for 2 months, and you can sign up for it on my website at evaruland.com. You'll find a link to Midlife Alchemy, and there you can learn much more about it, and you can sign up on that website there too.
Great. Yeah, and also people can work with you by Skype or by phone and or in person. So there's many ways to find to be with Eva, Dr. Ruland, I would say. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing your own experience and the framework, you know, for us for how to navigate. How to think about navigating, at least, through midlife, and it was really interesting. So
thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Lena. It was such a pleasure. Thank you so very much.
Oh, it was my pleasure, too. Thank you. It's great. And thanks, everyone, also, for listening, and we'll see you next week. Okay. Bye-bye, Eva.
Bye.
Bye.